here today that came to me just barely in time to get it on 24 hours notice. So I'll ask our staff to brief us on the bill.
Chair Fisher, members of the committee, House Joint Resolution 6 recognizes February of 2003, that would be this month, as Oregon School-Based Healthcare Month and urges the citizens to recognize the role of the school-based and school-linked healthcare centers. And today is a special day in the Capitol for all of those people who are associated with this bill.
Yes, we've noted their presence here and... Is it Tom Sinsick?
Yes.
Okay. Oregon School Board and the Healthcare Network. And Jackie Rose. And Bunny Lou, is it? Lewis? Okay. Well, I'll ask you to all come up together. Excuse me.
She must have just slipped in.
She just slipped in very quietly, I think.
You're more than welcome. Do you need help getting over there?
But I would love to have all my compatriots come up with me.
Okay, fine. That, and this is a cause of all my problems Friday getting this on.
I know. Thank you, Senator Chair Fisher, for allowing us to hear this. My name is Lori Monis Anderson, and I'm a state representative from District 50, which is Gresham. And I hate to come up before you with just a resolution. I wish we could have some bills that maybe had some real meat to them. But what House Joint Resolution 6 says is basically we want to proclaim February 2003 as February as school-based healthcare month. And as you all are very well know, we are cutting funding from schools, and first programs to go are usually school nurses and funding for school-based health centers. So when a child is not well, he cannot learn. His learning ability, behavior, and even impact on the family are all affected. And even though we do not have the resources to pay for many of these programs, what I would like for us to say is, yes, we do care about the physical and mental health of our children by proclaiming February 2003 as school-based health care month. And I'm not going to go into any more of my testimony other than I do want you to know that as of a year and a half ago, Oregon did rank 40th in the nation for providing school nursing services. And I'm sure with all of these cuts, we're probably closer to 50. But let us make a statement. Even though we have to cut health care out of our budget, that we still value the importance of HJR 6. And I would like to have Tom and Jackie, and is it Robin?
Bunny.
Take the floor. Thank you very much, Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming over. Testifying. Appreciate that. Okay, I guess we can go ahead here now. And I'll let you fight amongst yourself.
We're somewhat organized.
Who goes first now that we've had our first...
We've been learning to organize. Mr. Chair and members of the Human Resources Committee, I'm Tom Sinsick. I'm the president of the Oregon School-Based Healthcare Network. I'm here as a volunteer to speak about why the state of Oregon should give special recognition to the value of school-based health centers. I think the resolution speaks to itself, but I want to try to get it down to some simple terms and personal terms. For 30 years, I've been interested in assisting young people in getting an education so they could function and contribute in their community. At first, I was a teacher and found that kids had lives that were full of barriers to learning. I said, well, what should I do? Well, I learned as a family nurse practitioner that I can now work to reduce those barriers to learning. That's what I do every day. This is what school-based health clinics in Oregon and all around the country, the 1,400 of them, do. They are keeping kids healthy and ready to learn. Learning, of course, is the cornerstone of human resources. education is the most significant portion of creating contributing community members. And it's interesting, I'm talking about education, but that's why I provide the health care that I do. This is exactly what school-based health centers in Oregon do. They keep kids healthy and ready to learn. Students with access to school-based health centers are reported to have missed four times less as much schooling as those that don't have access. School-based health clinic users are less likely to be absent from class and less likely to drop out. In short, school-based health centers has been keeping kids in healthy, ready to learn in all parts of this state. This positive impact on students deserves recognition. Reducing teen pregnancy has been one of the performance criteria for our government. Thanks to school-based health clinics, the pregnancy rate is dropping. This means fewer young women dropping out of school. Better yet, students served has spoken to why school-based health clinics deserve recognition. The statewide student satisfaction survey on school-based health centers says the following. 97% report they are getting good or excellent health care in their school-based clinic. 95% reported they would like to follow the advice of their school-based health care provider. 67% of those students reported their overall health is better because of the clinics. I don't know of any other health system that gives these kinds of results, especially one where you follow 95% of the people follow the health care advice that they're giving. So this truly deserves recognition. Here are some personal testimonials from three students which say it all. I'm not going to read through them all. I have attached them. I will read a few excerpts. I have also attached a few of the 350 messages that were received from students, parents, and teachers that speak to the heart of the value of school-based health centers. These statements, when combined with the truth of the statements listed in the resolution, certainly say that the state of Oregon should acknowledge the contributions that school-based health centers have made to our state. Here are the comments. No matter what you think, we as young people do all make mistakes. Young people make mistakes. This is what the person says. Without the school-based health clinic, a lot of students would not be here because they give us encouragement when we thought there was no hope. Second student. They all care about me and my health and would probably do almost anything. Without them and the school-based health clinics, I don't know where I would be or what condition I would be in. And last, I think that school-based health centers are to me life saviors. Some mistakes cannot be fixed. On the other hand, some can, and the health centers are a perfect way to say that. I would love to say thank you to all the school-based health care center workers for doing a great job. So in closing, like Nicole, I hope you will thank school-based health centers for doing a great job. In recognition of this outstanding work, I ask that this committee support this resolution and declare February as National School-Based Health Clinic Awareness Month. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Fisher and members of the Human Resources Committee, I'm Jackie Rose, and I'm the immediate past president of the Oregon School-Based Health Center Network, and I'm happy to be here vacationing in beautiful Salem, Oregon, and having the opportunity to speak with you all. And actually, this Salem is where I first vacationed back when I was an adolescent, probably in need of health care and mental health and resources in Astoria.
I didn't realize we were a tourist attraction.
You are. I would leave Astoria and come down here for a vacation with my old girlfriend, and we went to the state fair in the mid '60s and heard a new group that was just there on the stage, Sonny and Cher. It's always good to get back here. In recent years, I tend to come down here, I think, during recessions when the funding for health services is decreasing. And I'm a public health nurse practitioner, and I've been providing care to youth in Clackamas County for 32 years, starting with the emotionally disturbed girls at Christie School, where I spent my first 10 years getting my feet wet and learning about how mental health, physical health issues really get in the way of learning, and the intergenerational repeating of poor health choices. And that was really meaningful work for me. I learned a lot. And then I went on in more directly into public health. And you know, and I got involved early on when we first established the Oregon Teen Pregnancy Task Force, and somehow got in with that, being the secretary and president for about 8 or 10 years or something. And we brought in the idea of school-based health centers into the state, and we brought Dr. Porter in from Harvard, who talked about the concept. And we've worked hard over the years trying to build that concept, because having a health provider there at critical times for youth makes a big difference, and that's where we can begin to make a change in intergenerational adverse health problems, which cost us lots when you go into health negotiations. But I'm digressing. I just want to step back and say that in my experience, it's absolutely clear that kids with unmet health needs and issues, whether they're physical or emotional, are distracted from their life's work. And the life's work for our children is to learn so that they can grow in to be healthy, adjusted, and contributing citizens in our communities. As I said, I've worked many years toward the establishment of school-based health care. I've seen tremendous work that people have done. This year I've been pulled, because of some of the cuts, a day or two a week into our main clinic, where I'm seeing the overflow of uninsured and Oregon Health Plan people coming through for county services. And as I walk in there distracted and not knowing where I'm going, I say, you know, I'm usually at the high school, but I'm here now. And a week ago when I said that to one young woman in her late 20s or so, she said, oh no, that can't possibly happen. They need that clinic. It made such a difference for me in school. So I went back and picked up this big chart and thumbed back through it. And there, back in 1989, I look, her first entry is the nurse coordinator, Lori Anderson. I said, oh, do you realize you're talking about Representative Mona Sanderson? I said, I'm sure she'd love to hear from you. But I just want to ask all of you to recognize the value of the outstanding work that's been done by many people over the last 15, 20 years or more in school-based health care. And I certainly hope that we will continue to provide the needed services for youth. And I ask you to support this resolution and declare February as National School-Based Health Care Awareness Month. Thank you.
Senator Fisher and members of the committee, thank you very much for listening to us. My name is Bunny Lewis, and I am a nurse practitioner in a school-based health center, and I also am the chair on the Cabinet of Health Policy for Oregon Nurses Association. And I'm here to say that our healthcare policy platform supports school-based care because it is a safety net clinic and a community resource. Basically, I want to take a moment just to talk about the clinic that I work in, because it's a little bit different. It is a school-based health center for high-risk kids. It's an alternative school. There's only about 80 to 100 students in that clinic, and for years I thought having visits of about 650 during a year was an incredible number. Let me tell you what's happened in the last 6 months. In the last 6 months, that one little clinic, which is run just by me, went from seeing an average of 650 visits in 1 year to seeing 514 that we're seeing from July to the end of December. I just pulled these statistics off. The other thing is the type of visit has changed. It is no longer just the headaches and the cough drops and those kinds of things. It is everything from one young lady walking in saying she was ready to commit suicide. I have been seeing illnesses, chronic illnesses, drug users, mental health issues. These are only a few. Depression, asthma. It is what every physician might see but cannot spend the time with. The other issue is that my population has changed. I have people coming back to me. 121 graduates came back to see me. I had people who have children in the daycare center there, and those babies are brought to me because the pediatricians are no longer open to Oregon Health Plan. And so I also have about 40% underinsured and uninsured who cannot get in to services. And now with Oregon Health Plan, we have primary care providers who are refusing to see them. So these children come to see me. The parents come to see me. Other individuals in the community come to see me because I am open to the public after school hours. So without a school-based health center at that school, the number of emergency rooms visits will increase, not to mention the effect on school attendance and the ability to learn without health care. As you can see, in this time of budget crisis and health care crisis in our state, school-based health centers are a vital part of keeping our children healthy and in school. Many of these students tell me that they come to school sometimes just to see me. And so that actually gets them to school. And if they want to try and leave, they come and see me. And a lot of times I can fix what it is, and they stay in school. So I'm here to ask you again to please support this resolution and to support school-based health centers in general. And I just attached the graphs. We didn't have a color copier, so I'm sorry, but hopefully you can get the gist of what I was talking about, the number of students. And certainly I see the majority are the 10th and 11th graders, but even the number of males has increased in using my clinic. So it's a vital part of our community, and I'm just a blip on the statistics for the state. Thank you.
Questions? Yes, Senator Morissette.
Thank you. How many clinics do we have in Oregon?
Well,
until yesterday.
I don't know. The count last week was 44.
44.
I think, I will probably know later in the week, maybe 10 of those are shutting their doors now.
Yes.
We have, Jackson County has closed two of their clinics. We had five of us that were part of the county. We have three others that are private funded. And of those, the two that closed were the elementary and the middle school clinics in Central Point. And that is a community that's fairly needy.
May I just follow? Tell me about the privately funded clinics.
There is two that are, well, they're not total. They're the hospitals and some grants have funded, and one I think is funded with some grants and with a clinic that is also a community clinic, and those are funded in a different way. But they serve two elementary schools in Medford, and one serves, I think it's elementary in Phoenix, Oregon. Okay. They're small.
Yes.
Do you have a list of all of these schools, the clinics, and could you?
They're in the report, I believe. The school based health center.
No, the report isn't there. Yeah. It will be distributed today to everyone. Okay. The annual report on school based health clinics and their role as a safety net in our community. One of the things that might be happening in the near future is we've had some conversation with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems to just open up some conversation, and but of course a lot of those are private nonprofit, but there's some discussion going on about options for trying to keep centers open. And some communities, Pendleton made an agreement with their hospital. I've heard some rumor from Baker that, you know, we're talking about on a temporary basis to get them to the end of the year so we wouldn't have to do a mid-year closure.
Okay. That would be helpful information. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much for hearing us on short notice.
It's all right. Is there anyone that did not get a chance to sign up that wishes to testify on House Joint Resolution 6? Senator Morissette, they told us this morning in the outlines for committee chairs that we were supposed to give a proportionate amount of time to the opposition. And we're kind of in bad luck here. I don't see any opposition. Thank you all for coming. Any discussion concerning House Joint Resolution 6?
Is this a work session now? Or are we?
I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Joint Resolution 6. How's that?
Okay. Well, I would move House Resolution 6 to the floor with a new pass recommendation.
Senator Morissette moves House Joint Resolution 6 to the Senate floor with a new pass recommendation. Hearing no further discussion, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Brown?
Aye.
Senator Burdick? Senator Parno?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye, and I would like to note at this time that Senator Burdick has been excused. She has another conflicting meeting. I'm not going to put this on the consent calendar because I think some might wish to speak to this, so we will let this go in a regular manner. Yes, Senator Brown.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I voted in support of this because I believe very strongly in school-based health clinics. I just hope we can make them a funding priority as we work to develop the 0305 budget. So
I would like to carry it.
All right. Senator Morissette would like to carry House Joint Resolution 6. For granting that, and it has passed. We will now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 161. And staff will acquaint us with the bill.
Chair Fisher, members of the committee, Senate Bill 161 prohibits state agencies from charging the Commission for the Blind for costs of rent or utilities for their vending facilities that are operated by the Commission on in public buildings or on public property.
And we have a list of folks who wish to weigh in on this. Okay. Linda Mock from the Commission for the Blind, I'm getting my tongue twisted here, and Doug Tindall, the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Is this mine?
And we've got Ed Replinger, and Ed doesn't tell us where he's from, but
no.
Oh, okay. We'll ask him to come up afterwards after we get these two folks up. Thank you.
It's a really neat looking. Actually,
why don't
you
want
that? So,
you want to start?
Chair Fisher, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Doug Tindall, a state maintenance engineer with the Oregon Department of Transportation. Unfortunately, Chair Fisher, I'm not going to help you with your balancing act by opposing this bill either, but we just raised one concern, and we've talked to the Commission for the Blind about this. In a number of our rest areas around the state, the Commission for the Blind has vending machines that sell a rather limited selection of beverages and food items. And we are reimbursed for the utility costs of those vending machines. We're informed by the Attorney General that we cannot use highway funds, constitutionally use highway funds, to pay those utility bills. So if we were prohibited from recovering those funds, we'd have to remove the vending machines. We've talked to the Commission, Ms. Mock, about this prior to this hearing, and we're convinced that we can come up with language that takes care of this problem and doesn't hurt what they're trying to accomplish. And with that, Senator, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Can you say that you've got to remove these if you can't get the basically electrical bill paid for them?
That's correct.
how much electricity does the vending machines of this type use?
Senator Fisher, we recover about $18,000 a year from the vending machines.
How many of them are there?
There are... We have them at 18 locations, and I'm sorry I didn't bring the number, but I believe it's somewhere over 60.
You know, Ray?
And so you get about $300 plus a piece. How much more electricity does a vending machine use in a refrigerator?
Chair Fisher, I'm not an electrician, so I couldn't tell you exactly what that usage is.
Yes, Senator Morrison.
Now, you're talking about not only the soda pop machines, but the candy machines,
yes,
right?
Correct.
Okay. I noticed there for a long time that the vending machine on the way south at Albany was 25 cents less than the vending machine at the next rest stop. Did you get that all straightened out? Do you set the price?
Chair Fisher, Senator Morissette, we do not. The Department of Transportation does not set the price.
Okay. My real question is, isn't there enough money coming in from the sale of items in the vending machine to take care of the costs of the vending machines?
And Senator Fisher, Senator Morissette, that's the way it's done currently, is that those monies are paid reimbursing ODOT for the cost of the utilities. I think it's a profit center for those vendors, and so there's plenty of money coming in. The money goes to the vendors. The money does not go to the Department of Transportation.
Money goes to...
Why are you here?
Chair Fisher, Senator Morissette, just wanted to raise the concern that without recovering the cost of paying for the electricity, the vending machines, we would have to take them out because we can't pay for that cost with highway funds.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You couldn't pay for them with some of the funds that... It takes 6 or 8 weeks to try to determine whether a city can put a... Jake Brake sign out on some of your property. And how much highway funds? Not all your stuff is highway funds, is it?
And Senator Fisher, all of the highway division is all highway funded. All of the maintenance of
So this is only in highway division?
Yes.
Offices, not in any other offices?
I know the concern of the money that is highway funds. And I'm not sure if it extends to other agencies if they have the same dedicated funding that we do.
Go ahead.
Senator Fisher and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Linda Mock, and I'm administrator of the Commission for the Blind, and I will try to help clarify a little bit on the issue as well from our perspective with the Department of Transportation and the roadside vending. This Senate bill actually is a result of a legislative concept that the agency introduced at the recommendation of DOS. The bill would provide authority to continue the existing practice that we have had of not charging rent or utilities to individuals who are blind who are operating vending and food services facilities in state locations through our business enterprise program. The business enterprise program, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, provides business management opportunities in food service and vending for Argonians who are legally blind in federal, state, and municipal location. The agency provides training for these managers, licensed qualified blind managers, and then provides ongoing technical assistance to those managers. Our ORSs provide that public buildings be encouraged to lease, license, or issue a permit to the commission for vending that would be operated by qualified blind people. Now, historically, the Commission for the Blind nor its licensed managers have paid rent or utilities for the facilities and the vending machines in the public building. However, no law has authorized this practice, hence the recommendation by DOS that we bring forward this bill. Currently, we have 15 units that are operating through the commission in state location, and this does include five of those would be in the highway vending, which is the issue with the Department of Transportation. We anticipate that with the expected decrease of the number of individuals who would be working in these locations with the budget shortfall that we're experiencing, that sales revenues will be down. And in addition, if these units were charged rent, which brought the issue forward, and utilities, many of them would have to close. And we have received notice from DOS that if the Senate bill does not pass, that the current unauthorized subsidies would be discontinued as of June 30th, 2005. Now, the situation with ODOT, we were not aware that they had these, what I understand to be constitutionally protected funds. And so what we had talked about informally, and I think would be agreeable to both parties, would be to add an amendment to the bill as it currently exists to exclude locations where with constitutionally protected funds. We currently are paying a fee which is based on a per machine fee for all of the machines that are in the highway vending program. And we feel that if we made that amendment, that I think it would address the concerns that you have of not being able to pay for the utilities. The fee basically is intended to be covering utilities as it currently exists, and I believe, and I have my manager of that program here, I think the amount is $10 a month approximately per machine. Is that right, Ray?
Yeah, I think per 20, 25
Okay, so it's $10 for a snack machine and $25 a month for a vending machine. That is the current fee, that, and it does total about $18,000 a year. Now, the income from those vending machines, to get to the question that Senator Morissette had, does go to individual blind vendors who are licensed by the agency. So the agency doesn't directly operate those. These are independent business people that we license, and then they operate them. So they actually do their own pricing on their items that they are providing, although there, I think, probably in most cases is consistency now within those units. But that was probably the issue, that we do have five different individuals who are providing the services for those roadside vending units currently. So they might have slightly different pricing structures depending on their business and their vending providers. So based on the fact that we feel that this would have a negative impact if we were to have to begin to pay rent in all of the facilities throughout the state, we urge your support in passing this bill so that we can help maintain employment for Oregon's blind vendors.
Mr. Ripplinger, do you wish to?
Yeah, basically, I'm a vendor in the Department of Revenue. I have the food service there, and I urge the passage of this bill basically because of the fact that if we have to start paying rent and utilities, it is going to more than double our prices to the customer, to our customers. And needless to say, we raise our prices much and we're going to lose them. Therefore, we're going to go down the tube. So I definitely urge the passage of this bill.
Linda, this type of thing is what Gordon Smith operates down in Douglas County, isn't it?
Yes, Senator Fisher, it is. We do operate in federal locations, county locations, as well as state locations. Although in Oregon, really the majority of our locations are state locations. We have a total of 27 units throughout the state.
And the cost is a fixed monthly rate?
Chair Fisher, yeah, we charge a fixed monthly rate per type of machine. That's the what. Maybe I should have started this. We're not proposing any change to what we currently do. We just need to be able to continue to do what we currently do.
I'm curious. Do you raise and lower the rates with the fluctuations in the cost of electricity?
Chair Fisher. No, we don't. We do this by agreement with it's an estimated cost of what, rather than trying to identify the exact cost of the different electrical rates all around the state. We've just got an agreement with the commission that says here's the cost that we're going to charge, and we feel that to be fair.
So it's all right to make money with the highway dollars, but not to pay them out.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Doug, isn't this part of a, I remember something 2 years ago, the Attorney General looked at all the monies you have and all the pots you have and the way you spend them and declared some are okay to spend that way and some are not. And isn't this part of that fallout?
Chair Fisher, Senator Carno, that's correct.
That was, thank you.
That was identified in that.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I might just
yes,
a comment. I think we all recognize this is a very worthy thing and a very serious problem. I just wonder how many other agencies will need to pass this legislation, or how many other needs we'll have to have for this kind of legislation.
I don't know. Seems to cover most other agencies, unless there were some by the that had the same. If they changed it to federal law in the amendment, probably would allow them to get by charging at least a minimal fee. The other agencies have dedicated monies that can't be used for anything else.
I'm just thinking of, say, seniors and disabled or any other buildings where people might not wish to be charged.
I guess what I was wondering was, it would seem like there's considerable monies other than just highway funds that are used by ODOT. And so why would they... How do they figure out whether their highway funds being used for this or not? That's for the question that I would wonder, because I would guess that those are not separate accounts.
Chair Fisher, they are separate. We do keep the money that's constitutionally protected separate from all other funds. But within the Department of Transportation, the vast majority, over 90% of our funds are in the constitutionally dedicated category. We, in terms of our state funds, I mean, our general fund is a few million dollars for rail and for senior and disabled transportation services, but almost all of our funds are, and all of mine within Highway Division, are constitutionally protected.
Senator Brown.
Linda, you said that this applied to a state or municipality. Would that include county as well?
Yes, it does. Uh-huh. We do have a number of facilities that are in county locations, such as courthouses particularly.
Okay.
And, you know, this was a recommendation out of DAS because it did originate when there was kind of an energy crisis, and some of the buildings that had not been charging utilities were looking at wanting to charge utilities, and we felt that it was going to be a real burden, as Rip described, to individuals who were operating those units to be able to pick those costs up and would actually cause some of them to go out of business. And so DAS recommended this. And they do, of course, manage the majority of the state locations in which we are located. We currently are not paying rent or utilities in any of the county or other buildings. So really, we looked at this as continuing what has historically been taking place, but getting the legislation in place so that it's an authorized activity versus just the way it's always been done.
A question, I guess. Mr. Riplinger said that he would have to probably remove his operations if these charges went out. Are you part of the charges that are coming now from the Department of Transportation, Mr. Riplinger?
I don't think, not the Department of Transportation. I don't think. I'm in the Department of Revenue. That's where my cafeteria is.
The reason I was wondering, it would seem like that it would be some value, obviously, to somebody to have those services continue, because if they're being used now, I can't see, just because who we're fighting over the who pays the rent or who doesn't pay the rent doesn't mean they're not needed. They're not utilized if they're there.
They're full
Commissioner, I think that is true. In addition to obviously providing employment for the vendors, it does provide food service to the individuals working in those buildings. So it is an advantage, and I think that is why the rent and utilities historically have been free, because they've felt that that's an advantage to have that available within the building for employees.
Yes, Senator Morrison.
Linda, in your letter, you have an 05 date, and on the bill it says an 03. Am I reading it wrong for the bill?
In the 05 date, I'm actually quoting the notification that we got from DAS of when they would begin charging rent, and all of their facilities would be that date. So I was assuming that they were going to give us a grace period to try to deal with the issue if this bill did not pass. That is an assumption on my part, but I actually double checked that this morning when I was looking at the letter. It does say 05.
Yeah. And you say that you've arrived at an amendment that you think will work?
Yes, Doug and I were discussing this, and we felt that if we excluded locations with constitutionally protected funds from item number 2 within the bill, where it says that they shall not charge the Commission for the Blind or Blind Person's License under the provisions of ORS 3465105570, and I thought we could add a phrase in there excluding any locations with constitutionally protected funds. And that, I think, would cover the issue.
Okay. Can we get that amendment?
Sure, for sure. I can certainly work with Legislative Council, and we can get that drawn up.
Okay.
And circulate it with ODOT and with the Commission for the Blind to make sure that everybody's okay.
All right, let's do that then and bring the bill back.
I wonder if we could put the state police in that amendment.
No. Senator Morissette, it sounds like you're ready to hit the big time back in Washington, D.C. here with all these side amendments. Thank you for coming. And
thank you.
Thank you.
I guess maybe we should keep more there to straighten out some of these things so that our highway funds aren't always held up hostage. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 161. Looks like our agendas will be short.
I think Art has something to say.
he was just going to get up here and catch us before we could get out the side door. We don't have a whole lot of bills. Several people are wanting to do additional work on bills, and we got a letter and a phone call the other day taking one of the bills away from us. Now that they've got it done, they don't want it. And several groups are having travels and one thing and another that are taking them out long enough that they don't want to have it till later on in February. So eventually maybe we'll get enough bills down through channels to
have
a long meeting.
We're going to have a long meeting, yeah. I have a feeling.
So with that said, we'll adjourn.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.